Well, thank you, Pratt family, for that great Bible reading. I love a good dramatic reading that brings the scriptures alive. It's really good. Welcome to all of you. If I've not met you before, my name is Chad. I'm pastor here at Kings Park Community Church. And whether you're a regular or joining us from home, it's great to have you. If you do have any questions or have any pastoral cares or concerns and want to catch up, my details are on the website. Today we're continuing a series in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and we've been mentioning that these are related gospels. They share a similar outline and storyline, and we'll be flip-flopping back between these different books to see how, what the same story they have to tell, but also their unique takes on some of these things. And last week I mentioned that I was going to be telling a story in two parts, because last week we heard about how Jesus went and calmed this mighty storm on the sea or lake of Galilee. But all that came about because we're also told that he said we must cross over to the other side, and we haven't got to the other side yet, but we're going to get there today, and we're going to see why Jesus set out on this journey in the first place. And how, in a sense, that calming of the storm and Jesus' power over the storm is related to the things that are going to happen today. And so, just as a reminder, the context of this story is Jesus had been doing what he often does. He was teaching, and great crowds came so that he was crowded and had to go and sit out on a boat and do his teaching from there. And he did that throughout the day. And we know that the evening was already on its way, but Jesus, without any special preparation, as we talked about last week, just as he was, set out on this great mission and this great journey to the other side of the lake and taking his disciples with him. So the lake that he is crossing is the lake or the Sea of Galilee, where the storm comes up, which Jesus calmed last week. But I mentioned to you that really one of the big lines of this story is Jesus saying, we must cross over to the other side. And some of the Gospels say we have to go to the other side of the lake, but Mark more cryptically just says we're going to go to the other side. And I mentioned that if you're a Star Wars fan, then you'll have a little bit of insight into this, because going to the other side wasn't just a geographical thing. Jesus was going to enter into new mission territory, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Just a little bit of sociological background from the first century. I don't know if some of you remember when we did our series in Isaiah at the beginning of this year. Isaiah the prophet warned how Israel would become like a tree cut down twice. It would be lopped off in the top half, and then later on the bottom half would be lopped off. Well, that top half was lopped off about 700 years before Jesus, when an army called the Assyrian army came through, wiped out the top half of Israel. And what they famously did was they just deported all of the locals. And then they imported other captive people into the area so no one could stay attached to their homeland. It was the idea of displacing people, so that they had no more identity. But over 700 years, a lot of the Israelites had migrated back to their homeland, the same thing that has happened in the last century or so. People were returning home, but the northern half of Israel was known as Galilee of the Gentiles. You might remember from Isaiah, Galilee of the Gentiles, people living by the sea. People walking in darkness have seen a great light. And this explains why Jesus, though most of his ministry up north was to Jewish people, occasionally he would meet Gentiles and he would minister to them. But now Jesus is going to go across the lake to a region called the Decapolis, a Greek word meaning the 10 cities. Jesus is going to be in new territory, and the fact that there are pigs running around and all that tells you we are not in Jewish territory anymore. And Jesus is going to do all of this, as we've heard, this great mission, this great journey to go and help one guy. At the end of the story, Jesus hops in the boat and heads back. This huge mission of Jesus all happens, it appears, to help one guy, one helpless pagan Gentile demoniac. And of course, we know that Jesus often, as he was doing his healing ministry, he drove out many demons. And in fact, Mark tells us, Mark 1:34, and he healed many who had various diseases and he cast out many demons, right? We get the point. He healed a lot of people, he cast out a lot of demons. And a lot of the demon stories we hear in just a few verses. There was this person, they were suffering from demonic possession, and Jesus came and drove out the demons, and then they were okay again. So why do we need this big, long, elaborate story that goes for 20 verses? That's the majority of this chapter. Well, just a little clue, when you see the Gospels slow down the pace and start focusing on details, it's a great story, but it's not just about fluff. There are usually things that we need to see. And we're going to look at, very briefly, five themes that come out of this story. Then I'm going to invite Brendan back up again to tell some of his own stories in a modern day setting. So there are five big themes that come out of this story of the demoniac that I want us to hear and that we need to take to heart today. So the first one, as I mentioned, is that Jesus is expanding his missional territory. They went across the lake, we're told, to the region of the Gerasenes. And I told you, they're now going to be in the area called the Decapolis. Jesus once famously told a Canaanite woman on the other side of the lake that I was sent to the lost sheep of Israel. Jesus made it very clear about his own ministry and even when he sent out his own disciples that their first priority was to the lost sheep of Israel. But from time to time, just to help remind his disciples that the mission was going to get bigger and it was going to expand to people of every nation and tribe and language, he would occasionally stop and help a Gentile person along the way. This time, Jesus isn't in happenstance, you know, stumbling across a Gentile person. Jesus is willingly, decidedly crossing the sea in order to help people on the other side of the lake. He's going to use this to show people his mission is not just to Israel alone. And this is a substitution story. Now, sometimes people, when they think about substitution, they think, well, that's talking about how Jesus died on the cross for my sins. He died in my place. And that is true. But sometimes what we forget is that in order to do all of this, the Son of God leaves his holy home in heaven and comes into the broken world, and we're told that he bears with our sins, that he takes upon himself our infirmities. Jesus is getting ready to go into an area where no self-respecting religious rabbi would ever go. And we can miss this in the story, so let me just point out a few things to you. Jesus is a Jewish rabbi. He's getting ready to cross over in the other sea, and he's going to be surrounded by a herd of 2,000 pigs. Remember the story of the prodigal son, and in the really low moment of his life, he finds himself in a pig pen. That's when he says, well, I am in the worst possible place. I really need help. Jesus is going to willingly walk into a herd of 2,000 pigs. We're told that this man was running around through the graveyards, and now Jesus is hanging out among graveyards and tombs. The Pharisees, Jesus once famously called whitewashed tombs. You are like unmarked graves that people step on without knowing it, because Jewish people avoided dead people. They avoided graveyards. Unless they absolutely had to do something, they avoided these places. Otherwise, they became unclean, just like they would become unclean if they were in a herd of pigs. And for that reason, they didn't hang out among Gentiles. And Jesus and Paul and others would be criticized for going into the homes of Gentiles. And now Jesus is crossing over into a Gentile region. And not only that, he is meeting with a demoniac, a man who is possessed by, as we've heard in the reading, impure spirits. We've got unclean animals, unclean people in unclean territory. Jesus is walking into a minefield of uncleanliness, and he is stepping on every single one. From the standpoint of the religious leaders, Jesus, you have walked among the unclean. You are unclean. You're the friend of sinners. It's a substitution story. But it's also a story where Jesus shows his power over Satan. A lot of people get really hung up in the 21st century about the poor pigs. You know, like that's where we really get stuck, because culturally we live in a different place. You know, we sit there and we eat our bacon and egg sandwich and fret over the pigs. In Jesus' story, there is this incredible poetic justice that is about to happen. Jesus is going to go into this unclean territory, go to this unclean man, say to the unclean spirits, go into the unclean pigs, then send the unclean pigs hurling over the cliff down below the graveyard into the sea, which was seen to be the abyss, the place of the dead. Unclean spirits go into the unclean animals, and people watch them run in fear and hurl themselves over the cliff down into the pit. Once when Jesus sent out his disciples and they were told to go out and heal as I have healed and drive out demons as I have driven out demons, and they returned and they rejoiced and they said, even the demons submit to us in your name. And he said, I have given you the authority to trample on snakes and scorpions, and I have seen Satan fall from heaven. I have seen him fall. As we watch the unclean spirits enter the unclean pigs and hurl themselves down, Satan is being defeated. How can anyone go and pillage a strong man's house unless he first binds the strong man? Jesus isn't just going and casting out some demons. Jesus is pillaging Satan's house and showing his authority over the powers of darkness in this world. But then, of course, we see these very different responses to Jesus, and Mark goes out of his way to show us the great irony. In verse 17, the people watch all that Jesus has done, and they plead with Jesus, leave. Please leave us alone. Go away from here. I always think about, you know, you go into some pub or some sort of dingy place, and then someone goes and flicks on the fluoro, and someone says, turn off that light. That's not what we're doing here. Jesus, leave. We don't want you here. But then in verse 18, as Jesus is getting in the boat to head back to the other side, the man who had been possessed by demons pleads with Jesus, please let me go with you. How many times have the demons said through the person, Jesus, what do you want with this? Go away from us. But now the ex-demon-possessed man begs Jesus, please, may I go with you. It kind of reminds us of what happened last week, where the disciples were out on the boat and they're terrified of the storm. And then Jesus speaks and shows his authority and his power. Silence, be still, go away. And the storm goes away and the sea is at peace. But then we're told that the disciples once again were terrified and said, "Who is this person that even the winds and the waves obey him?" This is a story that reminds us that Jesus has this great power, and that our battle is not just against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of the air. And in Jesus, there is someone who has the strength to overcome these things. And the more we realize this, and the less we try to fight our battles in our own power and in the world's powers, and realize we have the greatest power that there is right there at our disposal, the more we'll start winning some battles. We need to trust and believe in Jesus and in his power. But last of all, I want to say that from what I can tell based on Mark's gospel, we now have a story about the first Gentile missionary. Right? We think it's Paul. He hasn't even come on the scene yet. He's still a Pharisee who hates Jesus and doesn't want to have anything to do with him. But this man comes and pleads with Jesus, "I want to go with you back to the other side." And Jesus says, "No, you stay here and go and tell people how much Jesus has done for you." And so what happens? This Gentile man goes all throughout the Decapolis to the other Gentile people, and he begins telling them how much Jesus has done for him. Can you imagine hearing this man's testimony? You know, you're one of those people living in the Decapolis, and this guy comes up to you and says, "Hey, do you remember the story about that guy, that wild man that used to run through the tombs and cut himself and, you know, scream out?" And that was that horrible story. It's like something you'd see in a horror movie on television. "Oh, yeah, yeah. Whatever happened to that guy?" And he says, "That was me." "What? No, that was me. I was that man. But let me tell you how much Jesus has done for me." And the people heard his testimony, and they were absolutely amazed. Here in Mark's gospel, we find out that Jesus didn't just cross over to the other side of the lake to drive some demons out of one guy and then leave. He went over to appoint the first Gentile missionary who went and told people all over the Decapolis all about Jesus and what he had done. I want you to think a little bit about your own testimony today, because sometimes when we're asked to share a testimony, you say, "Oh, well, I became a Christian back in year 19, whenever, or year 2000, whatever, and, you know, and this happened and that happened." And one of our problems in sharing our testimony is that we can forget the spiritual element to it. Here's how Paul describes it. He says, "He rescued you, he rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son." See, once we all went astray and we followed Satan's lie and we believed what he told us and we sinned and fell short of the glory of God and the wages of sin were death and we were under Satan's power and we were under his curse, and he rescued us, the worst of sinners. He came from heaven and crossed the sea, and he came to me, the worst of sinners. He came to you, the worst of sinners, and he died to save you. And we realize that that's actually our testimony, not just when we became a Christian. That's our testimony. Then we'll have a little bit more to say. Now, normally at this point, I would spend a little bit of extra time and I would tell you about a story that I was really struck by when I was reading a book that was called Just Walk Across the Room. The basic short summary of the story is this black Muslim man who was living in the southern part of the U.S. He was a businessman, but because of his color and because of his religion, was always ostracized in the very conservative South. And so when they had the social gatherings, he would always find himself on one side of the room, standing off by himself, while all the white businessmen stood over on the other side of the room. And then one day when he was looking across, he saw this man who kept on looking at him, and then he watched this man excuse himself and walk across the room and introduce himself, and they formed a friendship, and the friendship led to him coming to know Christ. And he said, I'll never forget that moment of watching this man leave his comfort zone and his group and just walk across the room to come and put his hand out and meet me. A little bit later on today, I want you to know I'm going to be meeting with our ministry leaders to be looking at a Reach Australia report that talks about this very thing. How do we as Christians and as a church reach Australia? And the answer, in short, means that we're going to have to walk across the room. We're going to have to walk across the schoolyard, walk across the suburb. We're going to have to extricate ourselves from our comfort zone, and we're going to have to go into the places where Jesus has told us to go. So rather than spend a lot of time on that particular story, it struck me that we have Brendan here. And I've asked him to come up and basically do part two of the sermon, tell us a little bit about his story and how much God has done for him, and tell us a little bit more about the work he's been doing.
Thanks for that. Really privileged to be able to kind of just share a little bit, a few stories just about kind of my everyday about school and what that looks like, and how God has really been able to use me in different situations. But first, I wanted to just quickly go back to something I was talking about before, which was me being at church and then me walking away from God, because that was a really important part of the rest of the story that plays out here, and even how I'm able to be in a school and how I listen to God now and how I chat with him is really about me walking away when I was in high school. And I wanted to fit in, and I didn't know how to fit in. I wanted just to fit in with anyone because I just wanted acceptance. And I found the group that really kind of accepted me were those that were smoking weed. So I'm like, I guess I'll hang out with those guys. They're the ones that accept me. And so I was hanging out with them, and then I started smoking, and then we were going to parties, and then other drugs came up, so I started taking other drugs. And then eventually I started, one of my friends said, oh, do you know where to get it? Can you get some for me and then pass it on to me? And I go, yeah, sure. So then I started doing that with one mate, and then I started doing it with 10 mates, and then I started doing it in Castle Hill, and then I became a drug dealer. And from that point, one of my friends said, hey, you should come and see my cousin. And I said, sure, go see your cousin. And I started hanging out with the cousin. And the cousin turned out to be in a biker gang. And so he said, hey, you should come and do stuff with us. I said, okay, I'll do that. So I started hanging out in a biker gang, and I started selling for them. And I started what they call a runner. So I was running around Castle Hill selling drugs, because they weren't in Castle Hill at that time where I was able to. So I was a drug dealer for the bikies. That's kind of part of my journey. And all through that time, I was still going to church, because I'm a good Christian boy. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But that's kind of how my world of what I thought, oh, well, I'll just do this part here and I'll do the God part on Sunday and that's good enough. And so I really was wearing a mask about how I wanted to be seen over here and how I wanted to be seen over there. And that kind of came to a head when I had a drug overdose when I was 18. And I was lying in bed and shaking, and I couldn't stop it, and I thought I was going to die. And I just called out to God and said, make it stop, and it stopped. And I was extraordinarily confused by that, where I thought maybe it was me that did that. Maybe I'm the one who I took that away from myself, or maybe I made it up. Maybe it wasn't actually a thing at all. Maybe it was just me making that whole thing up in my head, or maybe it was God. And so I walked away from everyone, and I went up to Queensland where my sister lived. And in that time, I just kind of opened the Bible and went, there, I'll read that. And what came up was Matthew chapter 6, 25, where it talks about you'll either hate one master or you'll love one master. You know, you can't serve both God and money. And I was serving both God and drugs, and I was serving both God and friends. And I said, I can't do this anymore. And so I went back to Sydney to my mate's birthday party, and it was one of my bikey friends, and there was a whole bunch of people. There was 60 of them, so drug dealers, bikies, just general mates. And they said, oh, Brendan, come up and give a speech. I went, okay. So I went up, and I had this presence of God with me. It was quite remarkable. And I felt God say, now. And I went, now what? And he goes, now. I don't want to do that now. Like, that's not here. And I stood up and I said to everyone, I can't hang out with you anymore. God's kind of put on my heart to go a different way. And so therefore, this is the last time I'm going to hang out with you. So my mate drove me home. I went home, mate drove me home, and next day our house was Molotov'd, so had petrol bombed. We were going to knock our house down anyway, so that was fine, but we're already in the middle of putting that together. They didn't know that. We had death threats for the next 2 weeks, and that was like I eventually heard my mate on the phone, and I go, look, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not going to say anything. And that was the last time I spoke to them for, well, now 25 years I haven't spoken to them. That was a really weird, interesting place to come from, but that has actually stepped up how I now interact with God. And that for me is a very important thing, how I want to communicate and chat with God, which when I wanted to even join Power to Change, or I was thinking about that, or even starting at the school that I'm at now, I have just a conversation with God. I'm just talking with him and allowing God just to speak in my life. And what I see there is just surrender. I just want to surrender to God. Mm-hmm. And when I have surrender, what comes out of that is obedience. Like, that's the fruit from surrender, is obedience. It's not obedience first and then you surrender. Surrendering is allowing God to completely take over, in allowing him to make decisions of your life. And so even as I was at my first day at school as a chaplain, I was walking around, and as I was just walking, I'm like, all right, God, you've got me here. What do I do now? Like I'm here. What's the next step? And as I'm looking around, I just said, God, just stop me anywhere. Like, just help me focus on someone or what. Like, I don't know what it is you want me to do, but just do that. And as I'm looking around, I see this, like, my head just kind of stopped, and I looked at one student who's sitting by himself, and I just went up and sat with him. I go, hey, bud, what's going on? And he's like, oh, you know, it's my first day here and I don't really know anyone. And I'm like, oh, it's my first day here too. And he's like, huh, yeah, well, you know, I'm just started year seven. You know, it's everyone's first day of year seven. I'm like, oh, yeah, it is everyone's first day of year seven. It's my first day. They don't know who I am. Huh. Okay, so that kind of just triggered in like a moment. I got this kid involved with his friends. I go, oh, there's a bunch of your kids from your school. And he's like, oh, there's James. And he runs over and bolts over and like he was fine. And it was just like a real moment of going, okay, God's got me here to chat with people. And I realized two things, even just from that very small conversation, was to be present and available. It's to be those two things to people. And I just want to share two very quick stories with you. One is I came back from stress leave from school. I had a massive thing that happened at school where a kid's mum committed suicide, and it was from something that I was saying to the student and giving him some advice, and he took that advice and then his mum killed herself. And I'm like, whoa, did I do that? Is that because I've done something? Turns out it wasn't that. It was because she had a lot of mental health issues. And she was in and out of psych wards and all the rest of it. And I've just turned up on my first day back after being away for 3 weeks of stress leave. And as I'm it was his first day back as well. He decided to come back the same day I came back. Go figure. And then I was chatting with him and having this awesome conversation, big hugs, he was okay, and I told him to go home, like, just take the week, another week off, mate. Like, you just need time. And after that big conversation I was having with him, a teacher saw me and said, "Can I have a chat with you?" I go, "Yeah, of course, what's going on?" She took me into a room, and then she said, "I was raped by another teacher here at school." I'm like, "What? Okay, we need to go down to the police station right now. We just have to go. That's what will happen." So I told her head teacher, "Look, you can't ask me any questions. You just have to accept that I have to take this teacher off site." They go, "Sure, go." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Off we went, and went down to the police station. And then just hearing her stories just broken me. And then had to take her off to the hospital. I said, "Look, can I call your parents or someone?" And she said, "I'm Muslim, so I can't tell my parents about it." So she doesn't have any support. Who does she go to? Who is she going to tell and talk to and offload and be able to have counselling for? And so I said, "Look, I'll get you hooked up with some counsellors that I know and some people and outside workers from the school, and I really need to get you involved in some groups there," which she's doing great. In fact, went to her wedding during the school holidays that she got married. Phenomenal. As I came back from the hospital and she went home, I was getting my stuff, and the teacher said, "Hey, can I have a chat?" Like, "Yeah." And she sat down and she said, "Look, I was raped by someone on the weekend." What? Like, all the thoughts just kind of came into my head. I'm like, "What? Like, were you talking with the other teacher? Like, what's going on?" And she just offloaded her story. I'm like, "Okay, we've got to go to the police station." Off we go to the police station. So we're down at the police station, and I'm like, "Hi," again. They're like, "Weren't you just here?" And I'm like, "Yep, was." They're like, "Okay." So they took us into the interview room, and we're chatting with her. Shared her story, went off to the hospital to get her assessed, and then she was able to call her parents and got them down, and we ran through that, and then had to go through a whole procedure within that time. And after all that, I went and I had to tell the principal some of those stories because they need to know about this is duty of care for what they can do as well. And I'm just thinking, why are they telling me? Like, why me? Why is it something that you're a Muslim female telling me that they were raped? They're not allowed to have that conversation, but why are they telling me? Why is the kid telling me that his mum wants to kill herself if he doesn't go back up and live with her? Why me? Why is then another teacher telling me that they were raped? And I bring that to then last Saturday. I had a phone call from a teacher saying, "I've just tried to kill myself. I've taken a whole a bottle of Valium." I'm like, "Okay, I'm on my way." And so I raced down to her house and sat with her, and I said, "I have to call the ambulance. You got to have an ambulance down here." And we got an ambulance down, took her off to hospital and had her stomach pumped. And she's just offloading her whole life about what's going on in her world and the depression that she's feeling. And she's okay. Like, she was sorted. It's still an ongoing conversation and getting her to counselling and all the rest of it, even just during this week. And I had to go tell the principal. And I'm sitting with the principal in the principal's office, and I said, "I just need to tell you some big stories." And as I told her, she said, "Why you?" What a great question. And I said, "People are telling me because I love them and I'm present and I'm available. I'm available, God's called me here, and I'm available here, and I'm just present with people." And for her, that was massive, to know that someone is here that loves them more than just what the counsellor can do, more than just that. It's being the presence of Jesus for people that don't know God, and they're broken. Every day at school, we will have to call an ambulance or a police in some way down to school. because people are broken. We're dealing with students at the moment that are cutting themselves in the bathroom because they want to end their life. And we're the ones called into that. And here I am having Jesus live in me, and I just realize there's two things within that. One is sometimes Jesus isn't the answer. And this is a really difficult thing that I know it's kind of counterintuitive here, but the thing that people actually need in these moments is a hospital. And God's made medicine. And so God has placed me here to have that conversation with people where kids are like homosexual and they're like, I can't tell my parents. What do I do with that? I just got to sit with them and I got to love them and I got to be present with them in that. And I see that being present and available in that space with people is that I get to be Jesus in those times to people because that's the only Jesus they know. And so even though I say that sometimes Jesus isn't the answer, it's because they need medical attention right then and there. That's what they need in that exact moment. However, from that, every day I also get to have 10 conversations about God. In fact, I cut my thumb last week because I was cutting up vegetables and a teacher was asking me about God and Jesus. And as I was cutting up the vegetables, I cut my thumb. Just like that, I get to have these amazing conversations. But I want to pass that on to you guys, that what we actually are called to be is just present. Be Jesus where you are. Allow Jesus just to have his presence in you, because when we allow God's presence in us, that's what comes out to people. And I say that by, if we are actually actively allowing God in our life daily and just every small element of it, then what comes out of our mouth when people ask us questions is stuff that Jesus is actually doing in us. So when we were looking at buying a house, which we just live in Layla Park up the street, and when we were looking at buying a house, we said, God, what house do you want us to be in? Where do you want us to be? Like, what's the community you want us to hang out with and for you to be present in? And as we were praying, we looked at putting a deposit on a home, and we said, look, yeah, will you accept this much? And they go, no, we won't accept that much. You need to give us 20 grand more. And we're like, okay, well, let's go and pray about it. And so we said, God, in two weeks, if, you know, there's no other house that you want us to go, we will assume that's where you want us to be. And as we said amen, we had my wife had a ding on her phone, which was the real estate agent saying, this house has just come up. Come and have a look if you would like. And we're like, yes, we will. And we had a look, and that's the house that we bought. And I say this because when I was at school and I was talking with our admin staff, and I said, oh, we're looking at buying a house, and they were part of that kind of journey with us, they said, where are you looking? Like, what kind of house are you looking at? What kind of area are you looking at? I said, well, actually, we're just praying about it and seeing where God wants us to be. They're like, God, like, how does that work? Like, does God talk back to you? Like, when you ask him, like, is he saying something back? Yeah, he does. He talks to us, yeah. Well, how? What does it mean? Like, what does that mean? What does that look like? And now I got to have this conversation with all of the staff that were sitting there asking me questions about God, just because I actually asked God about what area to be in, then translates to, this is an opportunity that God allowed me to use to speak to people that actually revealed God. Like, this is wonderful. And this is what we're kind of called to be when we're present and available and we're allowing God just actively in our life. What comes out is God. Like, that's the thing that comes out because of the situations that we're in. From that, I'll just finish here, is that from that conversation with that staff member, she asked me to come around to her house and pray for her daughter who's having nightmares. And I got to go over with our pastor, with Tim, and we get to pray for a whole family and just get to be present there, who her daughter doesn't have nightmares anymore. And we're like, well, get to attribute that to God. It's because God is active and he is wanting us to be available because he's wanting to touch people's lives and he wants us to work. He wants to work through us. So I pass that on to you as just be present, available, and allow God to be at work, because it's actually not me. I'm just the guy that's there that's available. Thank you.
response to that, I think, is to stand and sing about God's amazing.